All right. Here we go. Another edition of Talkin' Dodgers, brought to you by Roger Brain Media and sponsored by Command Creative Studios. Looking to jump into the podcast world and start creating your own content? Well, just check out Command Recording Studios at Command Creative Studios. Is that right? All right. CommandCreativeStudios.com. We're just jumping right in. I'm super excited. Dodgers.
Oh, don't cut our advertising short.
We're going to cut this one short a little bit. All right. Don't forget to do that.
Don't do that. They'll pull our advertising.
Okay. All right.
Looking
to jump into the podcast world and start making your own content? Command Creative Studios is your one-stop shop for professional podcasts. With a team of audio engineers, music composers, and graphic designers, Command Creative Studios gets your podcast sounding professional as well as looking professional. For more information, please visit CommandCreativeStudios.com. Don't forget to click that like and subscribe button. Help us spread like a virus.
Like a virus.
This is what's on deck. Our player spotlight. Dodgers take game two. Lead the series now 2-0. We have a Ohtani injury update. We're going to recap game two and we'll preview game three. Just really quick. Mike, Max, how are you guys feeling? Let me know. Go, Mike, go.
I'm a little... How do I put this politely?
Take your time.
Okay, so I believe that Dave Roberts' arrogance currently right now might get the best of him if he's not careful.
Wow. You just can't.
Dude, oh, you go right in the hot take.
Oh, my God.
He didn't even say how you guys. You could say hi.
You could be excited right now. Damn. We have two games up on him. You're just all of a sudden just, okay, we're going to.
He didn't even say hi. He went straight for high heat, this guy.
Hey, kind of like Kopech's fastball.
He's coming in hot. Yeah.
All right. You know what? Let's just jump into that.
No. Mike. Yeah. So
let's jump into what are you seeing arrogance wise? I gave my take. I know you guys probably didn't listen to my solo take, but I had a whole thing on how I felt that the only decision that Roberts made in game one that I had an issue with was that he decided that he wanted to have Kike do a sack bunt with a runner on first and second with no outs. And you have followed behind Gavin Lux and Will Smith. Two guys who are not produced. Like, I understand Will Smith has two home runs in the postseason, but other than that, he doesn't have a lot. So you take one of your hottest hitters, your clutch hitters, the guy that you basically signed because he's clutch in the postseason, and you have him sack bunt over a runner to third and second. Like, that upset me.
Yeah.
But luckily, at the end of that game, there was a walk-off grand slam. So I didn't have to get really too crazy about it. But in game two, I didn't really see anything that bothered me that much. Maybe we can question maybe taking Yamamoto out a little early. But at the same time, he played the cards that he had, and I think he played them pretty well. But what upset you, Mike? Let me hear it.
I think the Yankees saw too much of trying to bring him in again. I feel like they saw him enough in game one to where they could tee up on him and hold off on taking those sliders and are patient at the plate.
Right.
And I think that he should have brought in somebody else.
Both of your points to be a stat guy, analytical guy for you guys.
I'm not saying Trinan's not an elite-level pitcher, but they saw him for two innings the night before.
So you're onto something because they're finding out analytically now that when lineups see the same relief pitcher multiple times, it's the same is happening like when a starter goes the third time around a batting order. So, Mike, that's a great observation. And people are, the analytical world, they're starting to notice that too, that, and the Dodgers are great. They understood that because if you remember the last series against the Mets, it was ridiculous. The stat was, Francisco Lindor faced 9 different pitchers because they did that purposefully to keep him off balance because, you know, he was right. A key part. Because they, just like all the other analytical teams, are realizing when a batter faces even high elite pitchers, the Yankees had the same situation with the Guardians. They saw Class A so many times, they started to hit him. And the same thing with their setup guy. I forgot his name. I apologize. The guy that Soto hit the home run off of. They saw him so many times in the series, or both of those guys, even though they're elite relievers, they started hitting him. And then, Robbie, for your take, with the bunting over, it's one, analytics is stupid because I pulled up the probabilities. runner on first and second, zero out, you usually have a 61 to 64% chance of scoring. Runner on second and third with one out, it's 65 to 68. So it's just a small smidgen percentage more likely that you're going to score. So because analytical people don't believe in hot, which Kike is red hot,
they're
like, well, we can't believe in hot, so we're going to make them bunt to increase our probability of scoring. Whereas you're not increasing it by like 10 or 20%. You're increasing it by what? You know, 4%? Is it really worth it? That's another reason why you shouldn't. It was kind of like, why are you doing this?
And both
of those are good takes, guys.
I don't want to say that, like, I came off super critical, but as a fan watching that, to me it was too obvious of a call there, and like,
you know,
I think he should be cautious with it because he's done so well now. And the biggest take on that, my trying to take, is what Chisholm's at bat.
Mm-hmm.
He threw five, is it a slider or breaker ball that he throws so dirty?
It's a sweeper.
Okay, so the sweeper, Jinx. He threw seven straight sweepers or whatever the hell it was. And on the eighth one, he hit a BB into right field. In my opinion, he should have went with fastball and switched it up a little bit. You know, even though he doesn't throw a new level fastball, you throw enough pitches, you see enough time, you're going to time it up and hit it.
No, first of all, China does have a really good fastball. I'm really shocked he didn't throw it more. He might not have maybe been feeling that pitch that day.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But you know what? You're not wrong, because I do think last episode when I did the solo one, I did mention that I didn't think they were even going to use Trident for game two because he pitched so much in game one.
Correct.
I didn't think he was an option. I wasn't sure about Vessier, which I think obviously they decided
one
to bring
pitch, yeah,
they
one,
did Vessier one pitch, but that was like a last ditch effort because obviously Trident didn't have it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about Gratterall because they're both coming back for injury. So I didn't know if they would do a back to back with them. And obviously I think that was the plan, to not do a back to back with them. I thought that they were going to have Kopech close, and they would have brought in Brazier. And that's what I agree with that. I was shocked, but at the same time, I understand that Kopech and Trinan are both better pitchers than Brazier.
I agree.
And so I think they wanted to go for the juggernaut. They wanted to go for the kill because they had the lead. And so maybe they had a conversation with Trinan, and Trinan said he was feeling good. And because of that sweeper, you know, what's his name?
You know, the pitch is coming. Number 11.
No, but what I'm saying.
Shortstop.
Volpe.
So Volpe and Judge got struck out on a sweeper.
Right. Because they both can't hit it. It's no secret. That Judge can't hit those pitches. Yeah. And then even Soto has actually some problems with it as well.
Yeah.
And so you know why they're going to go with Trident with those pitches.
Sure.
Those are like, they hit fastballs really, really well. So I can understand why they probably went to go that route. I can pretty much guarantee you that Trident's not going to be available for game three.
Why?
Well, because of how much
they're off.
I mean,
it's not enough.
I don't think it's enough
for
him.
He's pitched 50 pitches in 2 days.
But what do I know? What do I know? We're like, it's,
yeah.
What do I know? All right. So, but you're not wrong, Mike. You're like, I was a little shocked with that, but I think there were like, I think he handled it well. Obviously, if the Dodgers lose, then I, you know, probably don't think he handled it well. I did think that they maybe should have pulled him out maybe a little bit sooner, but at the same time, like, he has that pitch that when it's on, it's hard to hit. And he landed some really good ones. Granted, he did overthrow a couple of them that went to the dirt, but there were some really good ones that they didn't swing at, which they held up. They were really good at not swinging at some of those pitches that were good. At the end of the day,
I have one other take on that. You made another topic that I wanted to bring up is, I'm not too impressed with the plate umpires and their calls at the plate. Robbie, you and I talked about a pre-pod.
Man, you should have listened to that solo episode.
And I missed it. There was some, like, 0-2 count or 1-2 count strikes that were not called on the outside corner on Trinan several times. Like,
let me recap something for you.
Go ahead, recap it.
Let me recap something for you that I said in the last episode. So, Flaherty and Cole pitched really, they both pitched gems, okay? And really, the only run that Cole got on him is actually because of Soto's a bad right fielder. Like, that run shouldn't even have counted. And if you want to think about it, and this is what I said in the last podcast, if Soto was at least a decent right fielder, the Dodgers don't win that game. Because Kike would have been held to a double at least. Most likely should have been a single if it was an elite right fielder like Betts. However,
yeah, he was like lazy getting to the ball.
However, because Kike got a triple from it, and then all of a sudden he gets a sack fly from Smith. But regardless of that,
oh, that makes
because besides that, they both had pitched really good games because I think the hitters didn't know where the strike zone really was. And so the Dodgers couldn't really play their game, which as far as laying off of bad pitches and not swinging out of the strike zone, because that strike zone moved drastically on both sides. They had no idea really where the end zone was as far as like, there were pitches being called high in strikes, and then all of a sudden they weren't being called strikes anymore. Like high, like low and outside, and all of a sudden it was all over the place. The umpiring was terrible the first game. The second game, it wasn't as bad, but I still think it was pretty bad. And that plays a big part into these hitters. They don't know what they're like, how they're supposed to attack the pitchers. And the pitchers, I can see their eyes wide, like, oh, I'm going to keep throwing it out here because eventually they're going to get called a strike on it.
And they weren't.
I think a lot of calls went towards Flaherty and a lot of calls went towards Cole. I didn't see it as much in the second game, but it probably lingered over into the second game because it's been really bad. I'm really shocked that these umpires are the ones that are actually calling this game.
Yeah, like we talked about that two episodes ago, they have those weird metrics why they chose these guys, but it's
bad. It's real bad.
The first game is real bad, dude. Yeah,
real bad.
I mean, I know because there's a video of Cole throwing two sliders, and they're literally, you know how they overlay the pitches? It's literally like one is half of the other one, imagine two circles, and it's like this. One was a strike, one was a ball. Like I always said, when it comes to umpires, that as long as you're consistent, if you're gonna consistently call it outside is a strike, stay a strike. Because then the batters know, the pitchers know on both sides that's what it is. But when you're inconsistent like that, where one pitch is a strike and the next pitch is in the same vicinity, basically the same location, you call it a ball. What are you looking at? Just be consistent.
Yeah, when you got Joe Davis and you got John Smoltz both making comments throughout the entire broadcast going, well, that was a strike before. I'm not sure why it is now.
Exactly.
It's been really bad. And it sucks because you really don't want to be talking about the umpiring in the World Series. But
it's happening on both, it's a wash.
Yeah, but it should be.
It is happening on both. It is a wash, but at the same time, like,
it is.
They
need the better metrics to picking these guys.
But you don't want.
It's not Laz Diaz and Angel Hernandez, at least.
Right?
You don't need a third opponent, though, in the World Series.
Agreed.
And having a bad umpire is a third opponent right now. Yeah. All you want to see is the two juggernauts going against each other. And so far, I mean, it's happening for the most case, but if you have a pitcher, or if you have an umpire that actually calls a good game, that changes the outcome drastically. If you think about it, drastically it changes it, at least when it's this bad.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
Anyways.
I want to say one thing. You brought up Gerrit Cole. I've never watched Gerrit Cole pitch much at all. That dude is a real deal, dude. He is elite level pitcher.
He's good.
I was impressed with him, with his pitching. Like,
a lot of fans are not happy that they pulled him at 88 pitches, though.
I wouldn't disagree with that as far as a baseball fan goes.
That's what they're upset about. I'd have been upset. I would have been more upset about who they decided to put in at the end of the game.
Well, they're upset about that too.
But even the guy that Aaron came Boone in after him looked murdered. Shaky. He looked nervous as hell.
And game two, he put up Cousins
looked nervous as hell on the mound.
But and then there the other major thing they have a problem with is at the end of game two, they batted Trevino when you had the Martian on the bench. And why is he on the roster when
who's the Martian?
Jason Dominguez.
Got it.
So they could have put him in there and, you know, you get lucky with a swing. He's at this point, he's already a more superior hitter than your 210 batting, backup catcher.
Gotcha. Well, the good news is Dodgers are up 2-0.
Yeah.
That's good news for us. I don't know if it is for
Max. I don't know if it's for Max.
That's messed up.
Well, I already told you guys they had a clear path of the way they could, you know, win, steal this series, because I already told
you. They had a shot.
The way they steal this series is you have to win both of Cole's starts. You have to win one of Rodon's starts because Rodon is up and down pitcher. One day he's great. One day he melts under pressure. And then you win the bullpen game. Well, they lost the one Cole game, and they've lost one of those games that Rodon is pitching. So now you have to win game three and, you know, try to win that bullpen game. So that's that the Yankees were not going to outslug the Dodgers. The only way they were going to win is by stealing it through pitching.
Do you think Rodon pitched poorly in game two?
He gave up 3 home runs, dude.
I mean, we're talking about the Dodgers. But, yeah. like, generally speaking, Max, he follows the Yankees all year. Yeah. I don't know anything about him.
Rodon
is
the kind of pitcher when he could be rolling, right?
Yeah.
And then he walks a batter or he gets,
flustered.
He gets flustered and he gets derailed very easily. So he'll, like, walk a guy and that leads to, like, 5 runs.
I can see it in his demeanor in game two.
Yeah. It's over his head.
He walked a guy and then gave up a 2-run bomb, right?
Yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, that's the kind of Betts got a hit. His Betts got a hit, and then Teoscar got a 2-run homer.
Yeah, he unravels very easily.
My man Teoscar, right center.
Yeah.
All right, let's.
And Edmund.
Well, let's go over it. So Edmund's the man, so let's recap it. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's do an Ohtani injury update really quick.
Yeah, that's big.
So it looks like, you know, Ohtani will be playing
game three.
So Roberts came out and said that things look good enough for him to come out and play. Let me see the exact thing that Robert said. He suffered a sub. I can't even. Max, what do you got?
Subflexor or something?
Yeah.
It's like a partially separated shoulder is what I read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, anyways, I guess the movement's good. The strength is good. Everything's good with the arm. It's not his throwing hand. It's his left hand. So, regardless, it doesn't matter. I guess it's like the way, because he is left-handed when he hits. He swings. So
it's his front arm.
Yeah, it's the one that does the. It's his left arm.
His left.
It's his left arm. It's his back arm. So it's the one that has the least amount of movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you follow through, if you're left-handed, you're going to follow through with your right arm.
Yep.
And so that's the one that's got a lot of movement on the shoulder. Your left one, which that's the one that he slammed down on the ground. That one's not going to have as much rotator cuff movement kind of deal thing.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't hinder his swing too much is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no more head-first slides. Discomfort.
He ain't stealing anymore for the rest of the series. I'll tell you that right now.
So I didn't know, like, I just took Ohtani's stolen bases throughout the season for granted. I was doing a little research and reading up on it. They've always been concerned about his sliding technique and that he's never slid that great.
Oh, cool. I didn't see that.
No, I was reading up on it. They've always been concerned on the way he slides. I'm like, he got, 59 stolen bases, and we're just now hearing about, they're worried about his sliding technique?
Most guys, it seems like now they slide head first. He's like, very rarely do I see a guy who steals a base sliding in feet first.
I don't know if any Japanese players slide head first.
All of baseball, stolen bases were kind of like outlawed in baseball, if you remember, because of analytics. Stolen bases just got back into style because they changed the rules. Just when was that? Last year? So that's when all these stolen base numbers started increasing because they increased the base path, the bases themselves, and then pitchers can only check twice. So all that has led to an increase in stolen bases. But think about it. All throughout the minors, these guys are coming up who are playing now. They were taught not to steal bases because that messes up the 3-run home run game, right? Yeah, so you can't expect some of these guys to know how to properly slide like when we were growing up, and that was part of practice, learning how to slide.
I'm kind of,
you know, dudes don't steal like that anymore.
With his technique, I'm kind of surprised that he puts his arm down like that. Right, Robbie?
You do that, but he kind of slammed himself down. Normally you prop yourself up when you do
back,
slide like that.
Behind you.
Yeah, but he thudded down. If you look at it also, like, no, like a lot it's of times he slides degree. In, he looks pretty smooth.
Yeah.
It wasn't
unless
a very,
it caught him
it
off guard that the ball beat him there. I don't know. Anyways, good news is he's back.
Good news is he's going to be playing. So hopefully, you know, he's not going to lose a step on his swing. Hopefully he gets good contact, good wood on the ball.
What is he, like 2-for-19 this series?
Yeah, he's not really crushing it this series. So.
But that's the beauty of the Dodgers. The lineup can pick him up. Whereas the team that they're playing, Judge has been horrendous, but their lineup is not as good, so there's no one to prop him up.
He looks horrible.
So that is the beauty of the Dodgers. And what is it? Andrew Friedman has built an amazing organization that you have a circular lineup. They've battled all these injuries all year. They're in the World Series. They're 2 games away from winning the title. That's a credit to the organization.
Yeah.
Robbie, I got a question.
Yeah.
So let's say Ohtani only makes it through 1 at bat and maybe he's got to sit out game 4. What's the strategy for DH and fielding? What do we do?
So I was thinking that. I was thinking that. What do you do? Like who takes over DH? Because you don't have to worry about really your defense. Your defense stays exactly the same. So really, that is a good question, because I know that it'll still be a righty. So that'll mean that you'll still want Lux in the lineup. You'll still, I don't know. Do you take Muncy and make Muncy just the DH? Actually, no. I'm sorry.
He doesn't look very good at the plate.
No,
what
you do? Freddie Freeman becomes your DH. Muncy's still been looking good, dude. Muncy still has good at bats. He hasn't been crushing it, but his at bats have been looking decent. I would move Muncy to first base. You have Freddie Freeman DH. Move Kike to third, and then obviously you have Edmund still at shortstop. Lux still in center in second base, and then you put Paez in center field. And there you go. Now you get to rest Freddie Freeman with his legs, with his bad ankle, and you still have a solid defense. That's what I would do. And I think that's probably what they would do. But we'll see. I mean, I think it's all going to determine. I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if they came out tomorrow and said, you know what, we're going to give Ohtani a day off. And so Ohtani doesn't play game three.
Kidding me?
Or
Ohtani's playing, bro.
If he's in pain and he's not, and his swing looks really bad and he can't hit the baseball, and this is the World Series, you sit him out. Freeman took some for the team last series.
You act like they have a choice when it comes to Ohtani. He tells you if he's playing or not.
Oh my
okay?
God, this isn't LeBron James. Chill out.
It is. Ohtani runs the show, bro.
He's not running the show. I'm sorry, I hate to bring it to you. He ain't doing. He ain't got his money yet, dude.
If he says he's playing, he's playing.
He doesn't have his money yet.
He made them bat him first because he wanted to steal bases, bro. He just dictates the stuff.
All right.
Remember when Best comment is like, what Ohtani says goes? Remember that comment?
I do, yeah, I do.
Okay, so.
I wonder if it'll help him tighten up his swing and be like.
He'll be all right.
Fine, dude.
I've had shoulder problems.
I wouldn't be shocked if he goes 4-for-4 tomorrow and hits like fucking 4 grand slams. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about game two. Let's talk about Yamamoto. Okay, we've already talked 25 minutes into this podcast. We haven't even mentioned Yamamoto's name. Yamamoto pitches 6 1/3, gave up one hit, which is one bad pitch to Soto, which was a solo home run, walks to 4 Ks, 86 pitches. I'm going to tell you right now, he looked dominant. Like, he looked really, really, really good. And I know going into this series, the question was, could our starting pitching was not supposed to hold up against the Yankees. And so far we've gone 2 games. Granted, Cole got the better of Flaherty, but Flaherty still went into the 6th inning, only giving up 2 runs. He looked really good. Yamamoto goes 6 innings, gives up 1 run. That's pretty good for our starting pitching. And Yamamoto lived up to the hype. And I'm so glad that he is, you know, I feel like he could have kept going. Roberts, maybe he took him out a little early. Bonda came in and really locked it down. I feel like Yamamoto could have finished the 6, but I understand he's got to pitch another game most likely. You want to have him, you know, you don't want to overuse him and just make sure that he's ready to go. If you have a lead, you've got a bullpen you can rely on, but Yamamoto looked really good. Any takes on how you guys saw him, or did you guys see anything you guys didn't like?
He definitely earned his paycheck, that's for sure. He dominated. I would have left him in to see if he can go seven innings, maybe even 8. And the reason why I say that is because we were so reliant on trying and coming in and shutting it down and didn't do it. If he would have went 7 or maybe even all 7 full and all we had is the 8th and 9th left, you could have went to Banda came in, right?
Yeah, Banda came in.
Banda could have came in and had done 8, maybe 8 into the 9th, and then brought in Vessier possibly
Kopech, not Vessier. I don't think Vessier was supposed to pitch this game.
I'm just saying, one of those guys, you wouldn't have been so bullpen heavy after trying to. He had a two inning save game one, right? Am I right?
Who did? Oh, Trinan. He had an inning and a third.
So what I'm alluding to is back to what we talked about earlier is, I don't know if I would have had them see Trinan so much, because what's going to happen is in the next game 3, 4, 5, and 6, they've seen 60 pitches, maybe even 70 of you pitches tomorrow night or the following night. They're going to be able to tee up on that sweeper and be more patient at the plate. I think they should have seen less of Trinan leading into the middle of the series and toward the end of the series. And the way that Yama Moda was pitching, I would have left him in there longer and then went to Banda or Kopech to finish it up and left and tried not to pitch Trinan at all.
I think that if the Dodgers had a reliable fourth starter, then they might have let Yamamoto go longer. The fact that they know that they have a bullpen game and they're going to have all hands on deck and that they're trying to probably preserve some arms that, you know, don't handle back-to-backs as well or, you know, probably need 2 or 3 days off to be as efficient as possible, I think that might be that might have been a conversation piece where it's like, hey, you know, let's not overuse certain people for certain situations. I don't know.
The only reason I say that is because Yamamoto is pitching so well. Yeah. That's the only reason I say that is because he gave up one hit. If he had given up, you know, 6 or 7 hits and they were teeing off on him, sure.
It was it was 86 pitches to help you out with that.
I would have possibly left him in to see him to finish the seventh.
Full 7 innings is a nice round number. I agree. Either way, it could have been good.
I mean, we got the win, and again, I wouldn't be saying this if trying to shut everybody down. We didn't have the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth. Like, if he shuts him out, I wouldn't have that take.
Well,
I
agree. My thing is, so far, you know, he came in with that huge expectation because of the contract and never had thrown a pitch at 25, 26 years old. And he's had a really solid rookie year. He got hurt a little bit, but if you look at his last couple of starts in the playoffs here, that game, the second time around against San Diego, he shut him out.
Yep.
The Mets series.
Huge game.
Mets series, another solid lineup, only gave up 4 hits. And then here, with the Yankees, 1 hit. So he's really turned it on when it matters. And that was the thing with him, right? He was a big game pitcher in Japan. And he's shown up at the biggest stage. So
yeah, and he looks calm. Sorry, I'm cutting you off. Everybody off. I'm waiting for Robert to call me out because he do it all the time.
It's all good,
it's
man.
It's coming.
No, I will. Okay, so back to Yamamoto. You just hit a prime point. The stage is not too big for him. Like, the way he's pitched, like, I'm impressed by it in the biggest stage when he looked kind of not great in the leading into the postseason. But impressed nonetheless. We're up 2-0.
Yeah.
Hey, like, you know, we always joke about, you know, all these pitchers get hurt when they sign these long contracts. But, hey, he wins your World Series this year. That buys him at least a year off, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. All right. So Kopech comes in after Bonda, does one inning pitch, gives up 0 hits, 0 earned runs, obviously. Strikes out 1, looks a lot better this time around. They go over Trinan again in the bottom of the ninth. He only lasts 2 innings. Bases get loaded. 1 run comes in and scores. We'll talk about the scoring sequences and stuff later on. But Vessier comes in, throws 1 pitch, fly out to center field, ends a game. I mean, I know things got shaky in the ninth inning, but other than that, the pitching was absolutely phenomenal for the Dodgers. So, I mean, I'm sure we could keep going nitpicking, keeping somebody in longer. Maybe they should have used this person in this situation, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, they came out with the win, and that's really all that matters. Key players on offense. Ohtani goes 0-for-3, walks, hurts his arm. We talked about that a little bit. Betts 2-for-4, looking really good at the plate. Teoscar 2-for-4, 2-run homer, 2 RBIs. Freeman 1-for-4, another home run solo. Edmonds another home run, 2-for-4, double home run. I'll tell you right now, the conversation, obviously, if the Dodgers win the World Series, is right now, does Tommy Edmonds get another MVP World Series? Or, I'm sorry, does he get another MVP during this postseason in the World Series? Or does Freeman take it? Right now, I think Freeman's got the edge because obviously he hits the grand slam and then he hits a homer this game. But Tommy Edmonds is also started this series on fire as well. So I think it's right now it's between those two at the moment.
Yeah, and he had that huge defensive play, too.
And he's got the huge defensive play.
That was a huge play.
Hey, did your heart stop when they hit that fly ball to center?
Yep. For a second. Because that'd be so poetic for the Yankees to then hit a grand slam to take the lead.
Yeah. If it was Jason Dominguez, maybe.
Okay. Well, the way he jumped out of the box, he made it seem like that ball gave it a ride. And then Edmund, you know, kind of settled underneath.
His moment. It's good to, like, I mean, I keep seeing in social media the talking Yankee guys. Yeah. And they keep showing them. They keep showing, like, all the other guys, like everybody's moments on their watch parties and stuff. Like, oh, and they all put their heads down, and like they keep replaying the Freeman home run, and they replay it, like, Freeman's second home run. Like, why do we keep pitching to him? And I understand. I obviously, it'll take a turn, and I'm sure the Dodger fans will feel some pain as well throughout the series. Hopefully not. But
probably not.
Probably not.
You know, you don't have a pitcher who hasn't pitched in God knows how long, who doesn't throw hard. You bring him in to throw a lefty a groove pitch at 92 miles an hour.
Groove pitch.
Dude, he threw a fastball at 93 miles an hour on the inside corner of the plate to Freddie Freeman. Like,
it was a bad
any
pitch.
Any lefty would have tattooed that ball.
He definitely missed his mark.
Barry Bonds up there, that ball is still going.
Oh, yeah.
Griffey, it's out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Freeman murdered that ball.
He murdered it.
I think that was also, I think that was also the hardest.
He jumped on it.
That was the hardest ball I think he hit all season, too. I'm not kidding you. I've a lot of times when Freeman hits home runs, they barely get over the fence.
Yeah. It's a home run derby ball.
Like, that was a crush. The fact that he hit it and then turned and held the bat up like he was the champion of the world.
So epic.
So like, here's the thing.
Very rarely do you see that from Freeman.
And Yankee Land right before, and you know, people were talking about Tim Hill being like a big piece because he's there to get Ohtani.
Hitting
because
Rizzo
of the way,
right there pissed me off.
The way he throws Tim Hill is like a you know, that quarter arm, sidearm kind of thing. Is hard for lefties, and people thought he was going to be a key piece, and he's up there waiting to come in, and it goes with Cortez, and then he hits it, and then salt in the wound the next game, Hill comes in and pitches an inning and a third, and he's, you know, pretty much perfect.
Are fans watching that right now, Robbie?
Yeah, it's on. Yeah, dude, if you're on YouTube and you're watching.
When he beat Rizzo, my wife was so mad. I was cursing and yelling at the Yona thing, but dude, he crowds the plate like a mofo.
Yeah, but I don't understand why you're trying to throw him an inside slider if he's crowding the plate like that.
I agree.
push him off.
That's a bad pitch, but you can't push him off when it's a like.
It was I think I had two strikes on him.
You did have two strikes on him. That was a really weird pitch call. Well, I was going to talk about that later, but I understand you're looking at it right now. All right, so let's talk about the key moments. Obviously, we touched about it a little bit. Tommy Edmonds. All right, we can't say enough about Tommy Edmonds. I'm telling you
That's my guy. I like him a lot.
He is such a solid pickup. I really hope I love the way he plays baseball. I love the way that he approaches his at-bats. I love the way that he approaches the field. Like, he's just so smart. He's such a true baseball player that I really hope the Dodgers, I know we have him for one more year, but I really hope they lock him down and he becomes a key piece for some future runs going forward because he is a true, true baseball player. But anyways, so he leads off the second with a solo home run shot and it's crazy because like you always hear like everyone talks about like trajectory of swings. They talk about like their what's the word I'm looking for here? Their swing pitch. I can't.
The degree. I don't know.
The like, swing path.
Swing path.
Swing path. There you go.
He has a really level swing path, but somehow he gets that backspin on the ball to basically lift it out because that's like he swings really like. Flat,
yeah.
But somehow he's getting lift on these last two home runs, and I mean they're not just barely going over.
He's
they're
in the bottom
crushes.
Third of the baseball.
Some traditionalists would say that's the proper way to swing.
Some would,
but nowadays
then
everybody wants
that
uppercut swing.
Then you got the uppercut swing. Yep. But anyways,
you know, Tony Gwynn would love his swing.
Tony Gwynn was the man.
Robbie,
what
we sent him to a long term extension. Is he our starting center fielder? Or does he play short?
So I've been thinking about that in my head, which we could talk about that a little bit later because. I really want to make sure that like if there's two offensive defensive players, I really want the Dodgers. Let me rephrase that. Three. Like I really obviously we love Teoscar. We'd love them to sign Teoscar to a 3 or 4 year extension.
They're talking about Soto.
Dude, they're not gonna.
He's not
I
coming.
Just read
Soto,
it today.
Listen to
John
me.
Heyman
listen
just
to
came
me
out and
right.
said
John
that
Heyman's
the hold on, he's an insider, a baseball insider. He says the Dodgers, because of Ohtani's contract, will make a call. And, you know, they because here's the thing. They make a call to every top free agent. They don't sign them all, but they inquire. So
you want
to
know why I like Soto right now?
I'm just saying.
Because if Soto wasn't playing for the Yankees, the Dodgers don't win game one.
Because of the outfield?
Dude, he's a terrible outfielder, and he's not going to play DH. He's not, I understand, mentioned it in the last episode, I understand that you said that he's in the running for a gold glove, but he takes terrible routes. Like, exactly what we talk about with Paez, like, he doesn't know.
His angles were horrible.
His angles
terrible. You're not bringing Soto in for his defense,
no,
bro.
We're not bringing him in for his, like, I don't, I also don't like the way he plays baseball regardless. I don't like the way he does the shimmy thing.
Oh, you say that now, but he's a Dodger. Next year, you're going to love him just
didn't,
like
I didn't
you
like the
Ohtani.
Way Machado played when he was a Dodger, and I'm not going to like the way that Soto plays.
So, okay, hold on.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, but let me go back to what I was saying. Like, the guys that I want them to grab, I want them to Teoscar. I want the, I think they should get keep Tommy Emmons, and I really like Kike because of the way he plays in the postseason. He's a smart player.
He's got to come back too.
Like those three key parts, like I really want the Dodgers to get them. And also, they're not going to break your piggy bank. They could get the three of those players for exactly what they would pay for Soto. And you get three really good complementary pieces to go along with Betts, to go along with Shohei, to go along with Freeman with the rest of his contract. Like, dude, that's, you've lined it up. Like, and with not forget Will Smith, like you have, that's your whole infield pretty much.
Who starts at shortstop and who starts at center field if we signed Edmund to a long-term
deal?
Well,
I mean, right now, like really solid at the end of the year in AAA, so you're going to have to go in giving him a shot back at center field next year.
Outman?
Yeah. Because he killed it at the end of the season in AAA. If you follow us on Twitter, X, you know, we do a lot about the minor leagues on there, and there was a lot of, he was really, really good in the
you're going to love this.
End of the
I know we're supposed to be recapping a Yankee game, but you guys keep pulling me in the wrong direction this entire episode. I wouldn't be opposed to them to trade Lux and while he's still valuable, and get some key pitchers out of him, and you move Kike to second base and put Outman in center field, or give someone else a chance in center field.
Kike's their starting second baseman?
Why not?
I like him better than Lux.
I like him better than Lux.
I like that idea.
I think he plays better defense than Lux. I think he's obviously more clutch than Lux. Granted, Lux is still young. Lux could become the player that the Dodgers think that he could actually be. I think that's totally possible. But you could sign Kike and probably get 3 or 4 years out of Kike and not have to give him this huge contract where it's like, oh my God, like crap loads of money. You can sign him to a reasonable contract, probably $10 million a year. Get him 4 years for $40 million. In baseball, that's like, for the Dodgers, that's nothing.
I'll circle back around for you. I'd rather want to see Kike Hernandez as a starting second baseman for the rest of the World Series and see Gavin Lux on the bench.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But then who are you putting in center field? The problem with that is, though, Kike plays a really good center field as well, and he reads the ball really well. He gets good jumps on the ball. Lux isn't playing bad defense at second base, but Pias would be a downgrade in defense in center field, in my opinion. Just because of what I've seen, we're talking about routes and stuff like that. I even mentioned last podcast. It'd be like, you know,
But I would rather go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I would rather take Paez at the plate over Lux.
Only with a lefty.
I just don't feel with Lux right now.
I agree with that. I mean, Lux hasn't done much lately. He started off really good. He was doing great
the second half of the season.
He got injured.
Yeah.
Lux got injured during the Mets series.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it.
All right, I'm gonna try to finish this recap of the Yankee game.
That was a good episode.
Bear with me.
It was a good pod. I liked it.
All right, so let's go. Top of the third. Soto hits a solo home run off of Yamamoto. We talked about that. Really, Yamamoto's. Yeah. Did Soto not hit the home run in the top of the third?
No, I don't know. Why are we talking about the top of the third?
I'm just talking about game like when scores recap. Happen.
Oh,
dude.
You're going the whole inning by inning?
No, only when they score games. Because you're killing me, dude. You're killing me.
I keep taking us off topic.
So because Soto hit the solo home run, the Dodgers are like, well, you can get one. We'll get three. So bottom of the third, Betts hits a two-out single. Teoscar hits a two-run homer. And then Freeman's like, you hit a home run? Shaw hit another home run. Boom, there's a homer right there. So now the Dodgers have the lead 4-1. I'm going to just blow through this now so you guys can't interrupt me anymore.
Good.
So we're going all the way to the ninth inning. Stan hits a bullet off of third base. And I'm telling you, if Stan doesn't hit that, third base, he might have actually gotten a double from that, but even though he does run like a tortoise.
He can't run.
He might have gotten the double. But regardless, I think that did save a run, even though one did come in. Soto comes in. That's the last of scoring. The Dodgers win 4-2. There, I'm done. I'm done talking about the game.
Good, because you got to preview the next two games, bro.
Well, dude.
Let's go.
Well, we kept going off track, thanks to me.
All right. You know what? From what I saw, so this is when we're supposed to talk about like what we saw from the game, but I'm going to tell you right now, what I saw was pure dominance from the Dodgers. The Yankees, they're hoping for a miracle going back into their hometown because they are not hitting well. They need to figure out something about Judge. And it's funny because the talking Yankee guys, John Boy, went a little livid on what he thinks Boone should do with that lineup because the way the Judge is hitting in the postseason, not just against the Dodgers, he needs to be dropped in the order. That's what he wants him to do. And that's what I kind of saw, is that he is not hitting like a true third person in the batting order. Like, he's not hitting like your best player like right now. He's swinging the bat like your worst player, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe they should switch him and Soto.
Yeah, I understand there's some lightning in a bottle that could come from him, but until he can actually prove it, you might as well bring the guys in there that actually are hitting the baseball. The only guy that I was really worried about this series offensively is Soto, and he somehow keeps hitting the ball exactly like I thought he would. He's a great baseball player as far as at the plate. Terrible.
Generational.
Outfielder. Generational. Great. Just not on the Dodgers. All right. Hey, since you're not interrupting me anymore, why don't you go ahead and
do your ad spot?
Do your ad spot, Max.
Someone else is going to have to do it because I don't even have it up.
Player Spotlight is brought to you by Roger Brain Media. Oh, you got it?
I got it. The up and coming podcast company delivered top quality content across all podcast platforms. From sports entertainment to in-depth movie and TV reviews, Roger Brain Media is your go-to for fun and exciting content. Don't miss out. Visit their Patreon page at patreon.com/Roger Brain Media to support this dynamic new company and be part of something special. Subscribe now and get ready to have your brain truly entertained.
That's why you have teammates, to pick you up.
That's not all it says.
Oh, I see it, but I'm not going to read that. You think I'm
Burgundy?
Yeah, you think I'm Ron Burgundy? And speaking of teammates picking you up, that's how the Dodgers play baseball, baby.
There you go.
All right, game three preview. We got Buehler versus Schmidt. I am really excited about game three. I'm going to tell you why. Because we've been talking about Buehler all season and how he's gotten better throughout the season and how the haters have been jumping on him left and right, how he shouldn't be pitching, how he's not that guy anymore. He's not that dog that everybody's been looking for. And he has been proving people wrong since the postseason started. I understand his numbers didn't look great against the Padres, but that was not his fault. That was defense. That was Rojas. That was who else made the defense? Freeman with his throw to second base. There's a lot of issues happening in the Padres. Other than that, he looked really good. He goes and pitches against the Mets. He lasts only four innings, but that was a dominant four innings. I know he got some trouble, but he got through it, pitched scoreless. He had a lot of movement on his fastball, a lot of movement on his breaking pitches. I think his pitch count was relatively not too bad, but he gave up no runs, and he looked really good. He had a lot of swing and miss. Strikeouts were there. It was good. Now we're in the World Series, and we're going to get Walker Buehler World Series. Max, I know you've been high on him in the World Series, looking at his numbers and stuff. Mike, I know you know that he's got the swag and everything. What are you guys expecting in Game 3? Because for me, I'm not expecting Walker Buehler to come in there and pitch a shutout and go nine innings, get a no-hitter, look like the greatest pitcher known to man. But what I am expecting is a pitcher that's going to come in there and give you a fight. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like someone who's not going to just give the game away and be competitive throughout and challenge the Yankees in their hometown and just be that guy with that swag. Are you, Mike, seeing that, or do you feel that?
I'm a little nervous. So this has nothing to do with Walker Buehler. And in the sense that game three to me is a trap game.
Okay.
Cause we're up 2-0 and the Yankees can't afford to go down 3-0.
Sure.
And I'm a little bit nervous for Walker Buehler. However, he's a gamer, and I think he'll be bringing his best stuff. I think I'm a little wary of the outcome of that game just because it's game three, and the pressure's on. The pressure is on the Yankees to win that game.
Sure.
However, the other side of that, too, is with Walker Buehler coming off his injuries, and he's not as elite as he used to be, but he's going to need defensive help and us not to make dumb errors like we did in the last game.
We didn't make any errors last game.
But the last time we pitched, the one you just mentioned.
The San Diego game.
Where we had poor errors and it extended the inning and it wasn't his fault. We can't have that in New York.
Yeah.
Walker Buehler wins us a World Series if he pitches well.
Well, let me make you feel better, okay? You're worried about him and this, you know, the back-to-the-wall Yankee lineup. Listen, the Yankee lineup has not been impressive all playoffs. We talked about this before. They had clean path to the World Series because, you know, the real opposition's both got eliminated early. So this lineup is not a scary lineup as you would think of a typical team in the World Series. You can completely pitch through it because right now, especially with Judge not hitting, you don't throw a mistake to Stanton, and you know Soto's going to do Soto. You know, I don't think you can get this guy out. No. Just so, but yeah, he's not going to win.
He's seeing the ball really well.
Yeah, but and Stanton, you can pitch to Stanton. Just don't give him a fastball mistake. He's susceptible to sliders away and breaking balls. So you can walk him. Just walk him. So and then the rest of the lineup, there's nobody that you should be afraid of, or Walker Buehler should be afraid of. That's going to light him up as long as if he doesn't have his stuff, any lineup will beat a pitcher who doesn't have his stuff.
Right.
But if he has this, you know, because his mentality is what I like, because that's why he's always performed well in the playoffs. So I don't expect him to implode in Yankee Stadium. The ghost of Yankee Stadium, first of all, it's a new Yankee Stadium. Some of those ghosts didn't get the memo to come over to the new plot of land. So you shouldn't be worried about that side of things. You know, will, you know, Judge, you know, wake up? Who knows? But I still think Walker Buehler is in a solid position to pitch well. I'm not worried about him.
Well, let's not forget
that's why he's starting game three, too, because they know he has the mentality to go on the road and give you a quality start.
He's in a contract year, too. So
he's pitching for some money, right?
To dominate.
Well, here's another thing also, and then I was thinking about this, because remember, there was conversation going whether Buehler was going to pitch two games or was it going to be we're going to have two bullpen games, and so they didn't actually clarify who was going to be pitching game three until I think yesterday.
Yeah,
and so that means I think they're seeing something in Buehler in the bullpens that he's throwing right now, because it's not like he's just sitting around, like he's still working on it. He's still throwing some stuff.
I think he's getting stronger
I think because what they're seeing from him, I think they're realizing that he is getting stronger, and that's why they decided let's use him three, because we're going to want to use him seven if it goes to seven. And so because if they didn't, that means that they would need to use him on seven on a shorter rest if he pitched four on game four. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that alone right there is definitely positive. I mean, look, I was scared when they were going to do Flaherty game one just because of the last game that he had. When he had, it looked like he had dead arm, or like said they had a cold or flu, whatever the case was, he looked like a terrible pitcher against the Mets in game five. I was extremely worried. But what did we get in game one with a little help from really bad umpiring? We got a really good looking Flaherty who lasted, you know, five and third and gave up, you know, a 2-run homer to one of the hottest hitters the Yankees have in the postseason in Stanton. It's not like he gave up that home run to Rizzo, who is like a former person of what he used to be, or a former shell or the bottom of the lineup. He gave it to a guy who's known for hitting home runs and does really good in the postseason. So we can't be mad about that, but he looked really good. So the Dodgers saw something in Flaherty. They went with him in game one. Obviously, if he had dead arm, they wouldn't have used him. They would have basically got, you know, they would have figured something else out. So for the Dodgers to go with Buehler in game three, I feel like they're seeing something. I feel like they're seeing what we've been seeing leading into the postseason and what we've been seeing in the postseason. And I mean, we've just been seeing Buehler getting better and better with every single start. He has had a step back here and there, but it's progressing in the right direction. Now he's stretched out. He should be good to go. We might get six innings out of him. I mean, I'm looking at something right now that was on Bleacher Report from, who's this guy? Joe Tanasi. Joe Tanasi has a prediction that Walker Buehler is going to go five innings, give up three hits, zero earned runs, one walk, and six Ks. Nobody's putting these kind of articles up before the postseason started. Everybody was kind of doubting Buehler if he should even beat, they're using Buehler because everybody else is hurt. And to one point, they're right, because the Dodgers, you know, they didn't have Glass now. They don't have Gavin Stone was out. Obviously Kershaw was out. So it's like, this is who you had. You have these three starters and a bullpen. So, but Walker Buehler is coming back into becoming Walker Buehler of the old. I think he is. And so now they're giving him credit. Five innings pitched, three hits, zero earned runs, six Ks. They don't say that in the beginning of August. Now they're saying it when it comes in October, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
You're onto something there. I think he's coming right into his strength.
Yeah,
of just getting back to what he, a partially of what he used to be, But I think you're spot on. I think he's hitting his stride right now.
Yeah, and also,
and obviously it's the best time to hit your stride, that game three of the World Series.
And also, his back's not against the wall. You know what I mean? They're not going into New York being down two games.
Or being even, one-one.
Yeah, he can go in and pitch his game and attack them and not feel like he has to pitch around them so much. And kind of make them, I mean, because he's not as much of a
beat you.
Yeah, he's not as much of a strikeout pitcher as he was back in the day, at least not right now. Maybe he's come into it or whatever. So he's going to pitch more to contact. And what you've been seeing a lot is a lot of soft contact being hit from him. And that's why the Dodgers made the errors in the infield and stuff like that, because they're hitting weak balls. The Dodgers were just not making the plays. You know what I mean? So now he's got to strike out stuff. Now he's got that going on. I think we're going to see a good game from Buehler. And then the way that the Yankees have been swinging the baseball bat as well, I think that all favors towards the Dodgers as of right now. Granted, it's baseball. Things can change. But right now, I feel pretty good. I mean, I feel better about Buehler starting tomorrow than I did about before Flaherty's start in game one. Let's just say that. Okay.
I like it.
So, Max, Clark Schmidt has never pitched against the Dodgers, correct?
Correct. He's a young guy. He has he's only 28 years old or so. Listen, he has four. The thing with him, he's been really solid, to be honest with you. He's not going to give you a lot of length. He's going to give you four to five innings. But all year, I think he's only given up four runs, you know, once. Every other start, it's under four runs. Because he does mix it up. He has like four pitches that, let me put it on. He has a cutter, a sweeper, a sinker, and a knuckle curve. And he gets fairly really good whiff rates on all four of those pitches.
Okay.
So he mixes it up a lot. He's not going to overpower you, but, you know, he has consistent, you know, mechanics and arm angles. So all the pitches are coming in looking similar, and he gets good whiff rates. So it's, again, soft contact. He's a solid middle of the rotation kind of pitcher. That's just solid. He's not going to be your ace. He's not hittable, but
he's not Cole.
Yeah, he's not Cole, but he's very respectable.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So last question I got for you. You're looking at
Luis,
the stat.
Luis Gil, the game four starter. Now that guy, he only has like three pitches. He throws a lot of fastballs. Like half of his pitches are going to be his forcing fastball, because he has a lively fastball. So and then he has a slider and a changeup. So he's even younger, and he just throws hard. He hasn't mastered his secondary pitches. That's why he's starting game four. There was talk he was going to be in a bullpen if, you know, Stroman was pitching better towards the end of the season, which he wasn't. So you get Heal to pitch. So he's a fastball guy. So, it, you know, get ready to swing at those.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Not to jump already into game four, but if the Dodgers take game three, does Cole pitch game four?
Possibly, yes. He probably will ask for that.
Yeah.
On short rest.
You know who loves fastballs right now? It's Freddie Freeman.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so what I was going to ask, though... with Buehler, I know Buehler's probably got some stats against some of these Yankee guys. Anybody hit Buehler really well in the past?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I don't think
some time.
I don't think Buehler saw him this year. And so it's probably, I mean, a lot of these guys are known for, I mean, they've just been either one guy's been in the Dodgers organization or they've all been in the American League. So
yeah, pretty
Buehler
much
might not have seen any of these guys a lot, like maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
Oh, in the National League? Yeah, he did. Yeah, obviously he did see Soto. How did Soto hit him, actually? That's a good one.
Yeah.
With the Nationals and
two
the
hits,
Padres.
10 at-bats, one RBI. Chaz has three hits against him. It's five RBIs, and Chaz had three hits the other night, right? So that's one thing. Rizzo has two hits and 9 at-bats.
Yeah, Rizzo.
And of people who are going to play, that's it. You know, he doesn't, there's nobody else who's on the Yankee, like nothing with Judge. It's really Rizzo, Soto, and Chisholm. That's it. Those are the only guys he's kind of.
The guys that came from the National League.
Pretty much. Yeah, there you go.
I forgot about that. All right. So that makes sense. Yeah. Obviously, Buehler went up against Soto in the playoffs in 2021, I believe, because he was on the Nationals when the Nationals knocked out the Dodgers. So, I'm wondering, I think Buehler actually pitched well that series.
Oh, well, maybe. I got to.
It's fine. I could be wrong, actually.
But there's not a lot of There's no track record there, so.
Okay.
He faced DJ LeMahieu a lot, but I'm assuming that's a lot when he was in Colorado as well, National League guy.
Right.
But LeMahieu's not playing. He's washed and he's hurt, so. Oh, and Trent Grisham, another National League guy, but he's not playing. So there's nothing really there.
Let's see, Bueller.
And in the bullpen game, it's, you know, is what it is.
Yeah. All right. I think that's pretty much it. That's all we have to really talk about as far as previewing.
Well, here's the thing. Like, do you want to celebrate in the Bronx or do you want to come back and win at home?
Look, I would like, I know I said that really thing that fueled you guys a little bit with, I wanted a memorable postseason. So, you know, back and forth is maybe what I was looking for. But after you take two games,
you just want
and
over
the stress that you had, the stress that I was feeling in game one, and then the stress I was feeling in game two in the ninth inning, just get it over with. You know what I mean? Just sweep
you've
it.
Come
and move
back to
on.
Our side.
Oh yeah,
you've come to our side.
Like, I mean, and I look. Here's the thing. I love Bueller. I've always liked Bueller. I'm not sure if Bueller's going to be a Dodger next year. I know this is a contract year for him. And all we're doing right now, what we're seeing is if Bueller pitches like the way we want Bueller to pitch, all it's doing is raising the price on what Bueller's worth. I was thinking before the playoffs even started that Bueller might come back to the Dodgers for a one year prove yourself contract, so that way you can get that big contract the following year. But the way he's pitching the postseason right now, if he has a big game tomorrow, all I think it does is solidify the fact that he's going to get a good contract from somebody because they'll think that his arm is good. And they think that they're going to get a postseason threat on their team, someone that's going to battle for them.
Yeah, I know a team that plays out in Queens that, you know, basically needs a whole pitching staff because all their pitchers this year were on one-year contracts.
Hey, and then maybe he's...
That's Bueller.
That would really
that
bum me out if he went to him.
That's that the profile of who you just said.
Yeah.
A team that's, you know, relatively close to have a lot of money that needs pitching. The Mets only have one pitcher on their staff right now that's under contract. So
well, the reason
Bueller makes a lot of sense there.
The reason why I say it though is because I like Bueller and I would like Bueller's stock to rise, whether if he's with the Dodgers or if he gets that contract that he deserves, because I don't think he ever got a chance to get that big contract.
How old is he?
30.
He's 30. He pitched in college and then he was in the arbitration mode until he got Tommy John surgery. So, or second one, because I think he had Tommy John before he started pitching for the Dodgers, his first one at least.
I think we talked about that earlier.
Yeah, so
earlier podcast,
he hasn't gotten his big contract yet. And so this was the time he was supposed to get it. And so now he's basically, you know, he might still want to do a prove me contract thing to see if he can get bigger money. But right now, like if he pitches well, like he's going to get it. And I hope he does get it. He seems like he's a good pitcher. He seems like a good guy. I mean, I would love it if it's with the Dodgers. I just don't know. If the Dodgers decide, hey, we're going to become a seven-man rotation, yeah, we need this guy. Let's sign him to a six-year contract. That would be amazing because you're going to have Kershaw one more year. He's going to be gone. I think he retires after he gets his 3,000. Was that he's going for? His 3,000 strikeout, I believe that's what it is that he's going for right now. That's why he's definitely coming back next year. I don't know. That's what, you know, off-season's about. We could talk about all that kind of stuff. But I hope We will talk about that stuff. But I hope a big game from Bueller. I like him. Get that contract. Get that, you know, get that money. Get us the win. Celebrate in the Bronx? Fine. Go celebrate in the Bronx. I'll be at the parade. I'm going to be okay.
What day is the parade?
What day is the parade?
Halloween is coming up. You got elections on Tuesday. When would they do the parade?
I mean, they should do it during the elections. That's already a
freaking hey. Don't jinx it for us, Max. We haven't won nothing yet. We're only.
I didn't bring it up. He brought it up.
Two games.
I didn't bring it up.
Celebrating
what in the Bronx.
What they could do is
hey, win game three and then
we got our parade. We get our parade. Let's call up all the guys that won it in 2020, and you get yourself a second bus and get all those guys that were on the team on 2020, and they could follow behind the 2024 parade and go, hey, we're with.
I guess you could do it Friday, right?
I think you could wait. There's a time in between all that stuff, dude. It's okay.
Win it first,
then lock down a date. Let's just find another date when all of our home teams are here, so that way the traffic's even worse, and then go from there. Let's make sure the Rams are playing, the Lakers are playing, and the Kings play after the Lakers. Make sure that the Clippers got a thing going.
A concert, right. A couple concerts.
Maybe Pink Floyd's doing a reunion over at the Hollywood Bowl. Who knows? Okay.
Beyonce's at, you know, Beyonce. The forum or something.
And then we can also have the trial of Diddy at the same time. Okay.
Hey, speaking of concerts, I thought it was pretty dope of Ice Cube coming out.
Hey, and game that was two. Pretty
that was
dope.
Cool. That was cool.
What sucked is, look, here really fast. I know if you, hey, look, guys, if you made it this long in the podcast, you listen to what we're
this
talking
is
about
bonus
now.
Content.
This is bonus content for sure.
Yeah.
So game two yesterday, I'm at a birthday party, right? So game starts. I got my phone on. I've got it magnetized to like the side pole of a basketball rim. And we got five dads just kind of sitting there, just kind of watching the game and stuff. You know, what's happened. But it starts off and all you see is like, is that Ice Cube? I have no volume on. I'm like, this has got to be like the dumbest thing ever. But don't listen to it anyways. We watch the game, blah, 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 whatever. But then I come home and look at the highlights. Dude, that was dope. Like the word changing, the lyrics he was changing and stuff to match up with the Dodgers and everything. Like,
I mean, he is a professional, but
he's a professional. But
the real thing is, it was really good.
It's for one dude who's walking from center field trying to hype up 50,000 people. Sometimes that stuff looks dumb, but when you put the audio on, it was pretty cool.
You don't always see that in baseball.
No, they don't. But here, hold on. The real thing is here. go back. With all due respect.
Due respect.
How do you go to a birthday party in LA, the World Series is on, and whoever's hosting this
didn't provide a game option.
Yeah. All due
check
respect.
This out. And I know he's not listening to the podcast. I got it even better than that. He was at game one.
Oh,
he was at game
that's a violation.
One.
He didn't have a TV
in the backyard during the party, and he didn't even have it on inside. And all the dads are sitting in the corner going, what's going on here?
What?
Maybe the wife.
Listen, I'll tell you right now. I'm one of those.
Not only
I
that,
I would have grabbed the remote and I would have put it on myself.
Not only that, the dude had two pinatas at the party. He had two pinatas.
Wow.
That means it took longer, and he could afford two pinatas. That means he could afford to put a TV on the backyard,
or a projector, or
projector
anything,
or something,
or put it on an inside.
He's a nice guy, though. He's a really nice guy, though.
I know. I said with all due respect, but you should have took in the bull by the horn, grabbed the remote, and put it on.
Dude, I was walking. Just I walked by everybody that a Dodger hat on. I was like, hey, psst, game's on over the corner over there. And everybody slowly migrated over there.
Unbelievable.
It's fine. It worked out. But even when Tommy Edmonds hit the home run, I started cheering. Everyone's kind of looking at me like I'm crazy. Because you couldn't tell that I was watching the TV. I was like, oh, yeah, dude, that's great. You guys are playing tag. Awesome.
I'm sorry. That's a bad job. He should have had the game on.
Game on.
I don't know your friend. I'm just saying.
That's okay because I was talking to one of the other coaches at Hart, the coach for the A's, Jason. Their practice got canceled on Friday because none of the directors took on a slot to open up the field because everybody wanted to watch the Dodger game. So he didn't even have his practice. And so he was complaining to me about it. I'm like, dude, I canceled one of my practices because of a playoff game. And you didn't cancel your practice because of a World Series game? Like,
yeah, if anything,
none of your kids would have showed up anyways. Yeah, none of the parents going to take them.
That's an educational piece. You bring the kids in, they learn situational baseball.
Exactly.
And, you know, you invited me Friday, but I had the neighbor kids. They come over and they're like, can we watch the game?
I didn't want to talk about
place.
You on that.
So,
I'm helping the future generation. That was the lamest excuse
ever. No. I had a whole bunch of kids at my house.
Even Melissa was making fun of you.
They were in the backyard.
The neighbor kids?
Yeah, they wanted to watch the game. Well, and then, you know, they put the icing on the cake. They were like, we want the Yankees to win. I was like, oh, come on in. You know, and they watched it with my kids, and they you know.
You're embarrassing yourself.
Listen.
Here right now.
No, I was helping the future generation.
What are you doing
become
tomorrow?
Baseball fans.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Nothing, but I wasn't invited, so screw
I'm inviting you now. Do you have to go pick up Martine at work?
You're going to invite me
Hey,
now.
Listen up, listeners. Robbie's got an open house for you to watch the Dodger
Everybody
game
show up.
Everybody
I'm actually,
show
you know
up.
What I'm going to do? I might actually set the game up on the projector outside. Look and so that. In the street.
Well, one thing that Robbie didn't mention is the athletics and our 5U baseball team. I don't think Mr. Practice would have killed them.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of Talking Dodgers. Thank you so much for listening. If you've listened this far, you must be a fan. Please go click that like and subscribe button. Help us spread like a virus.
Like a virus.
I did it for the kids, and he's bad-mouthing me. Him and his wife complaining. I'm opening up my door so kids can watch the World Series.
Go
and
check
I'm
out,
the bad guy. You're the bad guy.
Go check out that Patreon page at patreon.com/RotYourBrainMedia. All of your contributions help us create content, help us keep the lights on, pay rent, buy a cup of coffee so we could stay awake and listen to all of this gibberish that Max says.
About This is good content. This is good stuff.
All right, you guys are both muted. I'm done with you. Okay, try talking now, guys. All right, thank you guys so much. We will catch you next time. Go Dodgers. Go Dodgers. Win game 3. Did it for the... Goodbye.